This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers might be 0-5 on the road this postseason, but 5-0 at home. And guess where they are tonight, ladies and gentlemen? They are back home looking to build off of what was a Game 3 win, laying 3.5 at home tonight. Total 213.5 as the series rolls on with the Detroit Pistons. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Excited to have Danny Cunningham join us here on the Progressive Guest Line to help us break it all down. Covers the Cleveland Cavaliers at The Inside Shot on Substack. Locked On Cavs, also host for 92.3 The Fan. You can follow him on X at Real D Cunningham. Also, by the way, new Locked On Cavs dropped last night, previewing Game 4. So appreciate you giving us kind of the pared down Cliff Notes version to get set for tonight. How are you, Danny?
I'm well. Thank you too for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty tonight. Just first off, initial feelings for how the Cavs can continue to respond and try to build off of Game 3.
So for me, I think it's all about shooting for them. And that might sound obvious, but they have been one of the best three-point shooting teams in the postseason when they've played inside Rocket Arena, which is a big part of the reason why they're 5-0 in home games in the playoffs so far and 0-5 in road games, because that shooting has not traveled, whether it's been to Toronto or to Detroit. And I don't think they shot the ball exceptionally well in Game 3, but they shot the ball much better in Game 3 than they did in Game 2. They've done a great job, I think, of generating open and wide open three-pointers against this really good Detroit defense, but more than a third of Cleveland shots have been open or wide open threes so far in this series, and they're not hitting them at a clip that they need to in order to win. Now, are they due for a hot shooting game at home? I think they probably are. Donovan Mitchell, I think, has looked much more comfortable in this series than he did in the series against the Toronto Raptors. And I don't necessarily know what to expect from James Harden, but he has a history while in the postseason of, like, later in the rounds, not necessarily being as good. He's been one of the best Game 4 players in NBA history. So maybe we see a big night from him as well.
The other part of this outside of the shooting has been the turnovers. What have you seen on the turnovers on the offensive end and whether or not those are correctable mistakes?
So I think in the last couple of games, the Cavs have done a better job. It's not been great still. Like, they still have a lot of room for improvement. But in Game 1, they had 4 or 5 turnovers that I'm not sure Detroit's defense had anything to do with, where they just basically handed the ball to the Pistons, or Donovan Mitchell would catch a pass while standing out of bounds, or Sam Merrill would dribble the ball off of his foot. And they have cut down on those turnovers over the past couple of games. They need to continue to do a better job of that. And I think a big part of it has been what they've looked like in the first half. Right. So far in the postseason, the Cavs have turned the basketball over in the first half of games more than any other team in the NBA. They're dead last. And then in the second half of games, the Cavs are one of the teams that has been better about protecting the basketball. If they can do that, if they can protect the basketball just at an adequate clip, we know that this Pistons defense is one that's really good at creating turnovers, that's really good at taking advantage with points off turnovers. Those things are going to happen. But for the Cavs, they can't aid the Pistons at times in helping them create turnovers by having these self-inflicted mistakes. So if they do that, and if they shoot the ball at an average level, I think that their pathways to victory are pretty wide.
To go back to James Harden, obviously when you first bring him in, the hope is that maybe he can be the missing piece to get Cleveland over the hump and be in a position to play for and win an NBA title. Then he has a couple of the games like he does, whereas you're talking about turnovers, he was a centerpiece of that and struggles. For him to have the vindication that he had late in that last game, is that enough, you think, to catapult his confidence and his game moving forward for Cleveland?
I think it has to be, and I think that has to be the hope, because he is somebody that, you know, this is year 17 for James, and James has played in the playoffs 17 consecutive seasons. So he's been in moments that were bigger than Game 3. Now, that was the biggest moment that he's had in a Cavs uniform without question, but he's been in bigger moments than that, and he has been through this before. But I do think that the fact that he is in a different role in Cleveland than really he's been at any point in his career, certainly any time other than back when he was with Oklahoma City when he was a young player in the league, I think is something that he's still getting adjusted to. And the Cavs are still learning what it looks like with Donovan Mitchell and James Harden playing alongside each other. It hasn't always looked pretty in the postseason, but I do think that there's enough that we have seen from the past couple of games with James and Donovan specifically that the Cavs can hope to build on. They've had some really successful moments when they've been able to get somebody like Duncan Robinson switched on to James Harden, or Tobias Harris switched on to James Harden. So I would look for that as something that the Cavs are probably going to try and do pretty frequently in game four. I think that there are some weak points to Detroit's defense, which overall is a very, very tough defense. But I think that there are some weak points that the Cavs have figured out that they're going to try and exploit. And James Harden needs to be a big part of that tonight.
Speaking of, have they drug tested Tobias Harris yet? What the hell is behind this series?
Man, it's not just this series. Like, you have to go back to that series against Orlando with how good he has been. I don't know. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and act as if I've watched every game that Tobias Harris has played throughout his illustrious career. I don't know that I've ever seen Tobias Harris play better basketball than what he's been playing throughout this postseason run, both against the Cavs in the first three games of this series and in the seven game series against the Orlando Magic. Like, he's obviously not been Detroit's best player. That goes to Cade Cunningham by a wide margin, but I think it's fair to ask the questions, where would the Detroit Pistons be without Tobias Harris? He's hit some big shots in this series, both in games two and even in game three in the game that the Cavs won. I think he had some huge moments against Orlando in the first round of that series. Like, I don't know where this Pistons team would be without Tobias Harris. Maybe at a certain point, he kind of reverts to who he's been throughout his entire career, but so far he has been such an awesome player for Detroit in this series.
For some context for our audience, last eight playoff games for Tobias Harris, 22.5 points, 7.5 rebounds on 48% shooting, rounded up to 49. He's been incredible. All right, let's stick with individual players. You know, James Harden, because of past failures, is always going to have a magnifying glass on him. But Evan Mobley is averaging 12-6 in this series and has not been as effective. What are the Pistons doing to get him out of his game?
I think that Detroit's doing a great job being physical with him when the Cavs are on offense. They've done a great job not allowing Evan to get to the spots that he wants to be in, the spots that he has thrived in. And I also think that they've done a good enough job of making Donovan Mitchell try and beat them himself at times, because Donovan is not the world's greatest playmaker. And I think that a lot of Donovan's minutes are paired with Evan Mobley, and Evan kind of relies on somebody else to help get him the basketball in the spots that he wants to be. And there have also been moments where Evan has not taken advantage of lesser defenders on him, certainly early on in this series. And I think that physicality is something that has bothered Evan. I will say, I think that he has matched that physicality when the Cavs have been on the defensive end of the floor, because this has not been a series that I think any of the bigs have played particularly well offensively. This has been one where a lot of the offensive success for both teams has been driven by the perimeter players. But the Cavs need more out of Evan Mobley on the offensive end of the floor. I think defensively it's hard to have complaints, but offensively they need him to really put a bit of a boost in his offensive production, not only tonight, but for the rest of this series.
You know, with him, it's always been too, hey, the shooting and helping space the floor and not clog it up as much. Where do you stand on this with him? Because, yeah, you can shoot the ball, but if you're not a threat, then obviously it doesn't really do that much. And in this series, he's not shooting it well. The last series, he did, though. So where does that conversation come in Cleveland around him, his shooting, and whether or not he should continue to do it just for the sake of doing it?
He needs to be willing to take them. I don't think you want to go overboard. Like, in the last game, he took two threes, and I think that's a fine place for him to be. I think if the Cavs get into a spot where Evan is taking five, six, seven threes on a night where he doesn't have it going on, that can really get their offense into trouble. But I do think that, and if you go back and watch the threes that he did take in game three, like, they're wide open threes. They're shots where the Pistons are almost daring him to shoot, and he needs to confidently step into those shots and make them. And to his credit, he did that against the Toronto Raptors. I thought he had a very good series. He had two bad games against Toronto, but in five of the seven games, I thought Evan was very effective offensively. He needs to carry that over to this series against Detroit. If he does that, the Cavs, I think, have a big advantage. If he can knock down a couple of shots from outside, I think that will loosen up Detroit's defense. And the Cavs had a lot of success when they got into the paint in game three. They were 27 of 34 inside the painted area in game three. I think they would like to see more attempts inside the paint. And part of that is Evan Mobley spacing Detroit's defense.
The other, of course, aspect of this whole series looming over it, Kenny Atkinson, you mentioned it. This is still inherently a short sample size with both James Harden and Donovan Mitchell together, and it's kind of a new-look team. The rotations have been pretty interesting. What have you made of Atkinson's performance in terms of the lineups that he's been employing?
I think he has struggled at times, and I don't think that is unique to this series. I think he struggled in the first series against the Toronto Raptors as well. I thought that the starting lineup change that he made in the first series was a mistake, removing Dean Wade from the starting lineup, because in that particular series, I thought Dean gave the Cavs their greatest defensive upside, and we know that this team has a lot of offensive talent on the perimeter. In this series, I don't think that's true. I think Jalen Tyson should be starting, and I think that Dean Wade, of the wing players, I'm not saying that he should not play, but I think that his minutes should be cut down a little bit. And I think part of the reason why the Cavs won game three is because if you look at the minutes allotment, Dean Wade only played 17 minutes. Max Strus led the Wings in minutes played, and Max only had 7 points. But his effectiveness in terms of things that he was able to do on the floor and some of the 50-50 balls that he came up with and the way that he changed the game for the Cavs, I felt was palpable in that game. And I think Jalen Tyson is similar of doing some of those things. And I think that those guys are also a little bit more aggressive offensively, where Dean can be hesitant at times. And I think that slows down what the Cavs want to do on the offensive end of the floor. So if I were Kenny Atkinson, I would put Jalen Tyson in the starting lineup tonight. I don't know if he's going to do it. I know it's rare for a team to make a starting lineup change after a victory. I thought it was something that should have been done after game one. They still have not done it, but I do think that that is the one area where Kenny Atkinson has struggled in this series.
Danny, before we let you go real quickly, who do you think wins the set when all is said and done?
I think the Pistons probably win this series because I don't have faith in the Cavs to show up three more times. They've looked great when they're at their best. I think that the Cavs find a way to get a win in game four on Monday night, but I'm just not sure that they're going to find a way to get two more wins because I don't trust them to be at their best on the road.
You're awesome. Thank you for the breakdown and insight today. We appreciate it.
Thank you both for having me.
Danny Cunningham, again, make sure you check out Locked On Cavaliers, the inside shot as well on Substack, and follow him on X at Real D Cunningham. And Pistons are -250 favorites in the set right now, up two games to one. But should Cleveland get another win here and you want to buy in on Detroit at a lower price, that could be an option as well. Cleveland 2-1 dogs in the set right now. So excited to see how game four, plays out tonight. Again, Cleveland lane 3.5 in this spot. We're going to step aside when we come back. Short card in Major League Baseball today, 6 games upon us, and why there is another reporter in the National Hockey League who needs to go straight to jail for some action she committed over the weekend. Not me.
Hey, let me get your attention real quick, podcast listeners. I've got something for you that feels too good to be true. First, credit where credit is due. If you're listening to this podcast, you're already leveling up your betting game. You're riding along with our best bets and top angles. And when there's a good game on, you're probably getting involved with a few props and alt markets as well. But there's one more layer if you really want to step things up, and that's VSiN Pro. Yeah, I've mentioned it before, but things are only getting better for our pro subscribers. We just rolled out our MLB prop projections, breaking down some of the best edges across strikeouts, hits, home runs, and more. And that's on top of everything else pro subscribers already get, including public betting splits, expert picks, and betting guides across the sports calendar. If you haven't tried it yet, stop sleeping on it. You can get your first month for just $9.99 or save big with promo code POD26 on an annual subscription. Hit the link in the description and start cashing in with VSiN Pro. All right, now back to the show.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
So I go through this looking at things on the internet all the time. Is this real? Is this AI? Is this clickbait?
Talk about the tweet I sent you about Tayshia Thompson the other day.
No, I wasn't. We're not going down that rabbit hole, okay?
Justin liked that one.
However, there is a reporter at Sportsnet, Anna Dua, who...
But first, before you even go here, I'm surprised you're even giving this
because
it's not real. There's no shot it's real.
You're sold that it's not real.
I'm 100%. You mean somebody put something up on Twitter that's fake and only for attention?
Well, this is why I have to know.
There's no shot. Go ahead.
And it has had virality, right? So that's exactly what you're going for when you that post word? Something like this, isn't it?
Sure.
Should I say it virality instead?
Virality?
So that's what I said. She posted her mid-game snack of the day. Shaved ice, no flavor, with mustard in it. And it's like a cup with a handle, and you see just like a spooned ice mustard.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Like I said, I don't believe that.
Where would
real.
You even come up with that, though, as something to post to get people to get engagement? That doesn't even make sense to me.
People throw stuff at the wall all the time. There's no, I'm surprised that you actually think
this
is real.
Well, the reason that I thought it was real.
You don't know her? I thought all you reporters like knew each other.
No, I don't know her, but she's clearly like a very fit and thin person. And so I was like, maybe it's because mustard and ice are no calories.
Sure.
That it's, I mean, I don't know. You're the fitness freak now. You eat 1,500 calories a day. So what is the...
And I do drink. I'm not going to give them a free pop, but I am currently drinking something that I've told you I do not enjoy, but I will now drink every day because I have to. So.
Like, I eat weird stuff, and I like mustard.
I like mustard as well.
I'll just eat, like, sometimes.
I prefer mustard on my pretzels.
Sometimes I'll get meat and cheese out of the refrigerator, like sandwich
just
stuff.
Put mustard on it.
And just put mustard on it.
It's fine.
Because it's good. But that seems a bit far.
Yes.
Okay. Straight to jail. What did you write, or what did Justin write? Potential felony behavior or something like that? 100%, Anna. So let's work it out.
Let's just do some journalism. What's her name?
Anna Dua.
Dua?
D-U-A.
All right. I'm going to book her.
We'll find out the truth.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds
good. I know she's probably at her peak popularity right now, but I'm going to find
out. She's got a lot of requests right now. I don't know if we can land her.
I know some people at Sportsnet.
You do?
Yeah. So do you.
Okay. On that note, let's get to Major League Baseball. 6 games in all today.
I'm busy.
Short card. Well, you need to get unbusy because your Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim are in action today against the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, I can't tell whether or not. So there's a report that says Alek Manoah is going to start, but then there's a report that is, that he's going to come in behind Suter.
Yeah, I was like, Brent Suter is the listed pitcher.
So I think Suter is going to be the opener, and then it sounds like Manoah is going to come in for the bulk innings as well. He did appear over the weekend, pitched an inning against Toronto. So maybe this is going to be his first start in the sense of stretched out past an inning. So we'll see if that's the case. Came in, struck out one against Toronto and 3 batters faced. So did a pretty decent job. Didn't look awful. Manoah famously has a pillar with his face on it out there at Angel Stadium, even though he had to go to AAA and kind of season up here a little bit. It shows you where the franchise is at this point right now. Look, this is every game is going to be about the same thing. Do you trust the pitching in the bullpen for the Angels? This is the second worst bullpen in Major League Baseball, and you got a Johnny Holstaff game coming up against the Guardians. I think that's why you are where you are right now with this pricing. Cantillo's going to get the start on the other side. 3.43 ERA. Phipps got some wiggle room at 4.41, and his command is a little bit shaky. And the problem with shaky command, if you're not balancing it out with swings and misses and strikeouts, well, then you're going to put your team in position to potentially get it done. And here we are, a -171 favorite, and yet he's got that issue. His strikeout numbers have been down from a season ago. He struck out about 26.9% of hitters he faced last season in 95 and a third. It's down to 22.6 with a walk rate up. So I think from a pricing standpoint, you definitely can't get me there when you're looking at laying $170 pre-flop with the Guardians. Weather's fair, wind's blowing directly in, but it's only up to 8 miles an hour. All this to be said that if we're looking at the way that this thing's being priced and you're saying, all right, well, if it's like -171 on Cleveland or -165, if you're going to give me like above +150 with the Angels, which you're seeing a smattering of places at that price, let's see. Formerly ESPN Bet at +150, South Point at +152. Let's see, Superbook at +150. So that price, I think it would be a play just numbers-wise on the Angels. I don't really trust their pitching, but that just seems a bridge too far given what we know about Cantillo and the fact that maybe he is a candidate for some regression.
Are you and JVT going to?
Me and JVT?
Are you and Adam?
And generally, I am at odds with myself.
I told you I'm having a day. Yeah. Are you and Adam going to butt heads tomorrow? Or no, because he's so negative on the Guardians anyways, he'll actually be pro Angels potential.
Yeah, we're generally both pretty pessimistic about our team, so that's it's gonna be an Eeyore off, and I don't think
that doesn't make for good TV. Let's go to
I'll ham it up for I'm known to do that every once in a while.
Yankees Orioles.
Sucks.
Baltimore's lost 8 of their last 11, playing one of the best teams in baseball right now. Of those losses, by the way, included a 4-game sweep by the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. Back at it today to kick off this set. Brandon Young, though, going for Baltimore, who's 3-1 in his 4 starts this season. Did give up 3 runs in 3 of them, though. Got rocked by Houston at the end of the month. Ryan Weathers going for New York. They're -156 road favorites in this spot. Total 9. Juice to the under, though, -118.
I like you're skipping a jaunt over the hardcore malicious facts of, yeah, they might have a winning record at their starts, but he has not been good.
Okay, I didn't want to put it like that.
But yeah, to put a little bit more context behind it.
I was giving them some optimism, okay?
You mentioned it. His first outing, goose egg in terms of the earned runs allowed, and then after that, it's been pretty ugly. 4.35 ERA, 4.81 fielding independent. Doesn't strike out a ton of guys. Doesn't generate a ton of swing and misses either. You look at some of the contact numbers in this small sample size, it's been relatively rough. 5 barrels, but 42% hard hit rate, so you're going to be able to get him if you want. And on the other side, you've got a gap to bring up, or to bridge, if you will, because Weathers has been fantastic for the Yankees. 3.03 ERA, an expected fielding independent of 2.95. So if you get a little bit better on the fly balls going out of the park, then you're looking at a guy who is absolutely elite, over 38 and 2/3. hard to really look at this and go, yeah, I want a piece of them, especially if you're, you know, you're looking at this price right here. This is DraftKings. That's a pretty tough split, minus 156 and plus 129 coming back on the other side. If you're getting a little bit more there, I guess maybe you want to give it a shot, but I guess maybe. We've seen some correction. We saw some spots open like minus 160, and I can understand because the high point here was minus 190, and I wonder if maybe had a small change in the lineup, whatever it was for the Yankees. Either way, I think at this pricing point under minus 150, maybe Yankees are nothing given the way that the Bronx Bombers pitching staff, specifically Weathers, has been performing here up to this point.
Any other games today of the slate that caught your attention?
There's a couple. Let's see. Drew Rasmussen and Kevin Gausman in the Rays-Blue Jays game that is set to get started at 4:05. This is a pretty good pitching matchup. Rasmussen's been really solid for the Rays over the course of 7 starts and 36 2/3, 2.95 ERA. The FIP is 3.72, so there is, again, to use that term, there is some space there, but it's not dramatic to the point where you're waiting for him to get shelled. And his expecting fielding independent is under 3. Numbers are pretty tight across the board. He's had some bad luck with the home runs. Batting average on balls in play has been a little unlucky, but he's generally given the Rays an opportunity every single time he's been out there. And Gausman has been nails too. So this looks like a really fun matchup. The total, it's 7, slightly shaded to the under, minus 115. Hard to really find a reason to go against that and think that this is going to be anything other than a relatively low scoring game between these two. We saw this open at some spots like minus 123. And other than that, we haven't really seen much movement. It's kind of tipped back and forth from like minus 124 at the low point here at Circuit back up to minus 128. I think it's a fairly priced game. Maybe if you wanted to get super, super risky, if you wanted to go first 5, isolate this to Gausman and Rasmussen and go under that low total between those two, that would make some sense. It's 3.5. Overs minus 120, so you can get some even money on the comeback depending on where you're looking.
While we're talking baseball, did want to remind you guys as well to check out the VSiN Daily Diamond, a sharp daily baseball betting insight pod where we have our beloved former MLB pitcher Jensen Lewis and Captain America Dave Ross breaking it all down, lines, totals, props, and futures each day. You can subscribe to the Daily Diamond wherever you get your podcasts. Also, while you're there, check out the entire VSiN podcast lineup, which includes Money Moves, Pod to the Futures, Hardwood Handicappers, all of that good stuff. You're on a couple of the pods every now and then. VSiN, remember, is the sports betting network. Check it out. Also, VSiN.com right now. Our Opta AI projections are one of the really cool tools that you can get on the website. And for baseball specifically, at least this month in May, you're up 4.33 units if you've been backing some of these strikeout model props with Opta AI. Ballpark Pal also up, and today's plays, shout out producer Justin Emery for putting these into the rundown today. Trevor McDonald for the Giants, over 4.5 strikeouts at plus money, plus 124 against the Dodgers. Michael Soroka under 5.5, minus 125 for the Diamondbacks against the Rangers. Those are the Monday model plays today, but it's something you can go check out on your own time, see where you agree or disagree with the market, where your numbers might agree or disagree. It's always a fun exercise to do and see your brain versus AI.
I'm looking into this Anna Dua nonsense.
Have you discovered anything more?
I mean, I think she's a liar. That's it.
Do you have any, like, really weird food takes?
I mean, I have to think about this for a second. It's not a take. That's like, are you eating just garbage?
Well, like, do you eat something where, like, people look at you and say basically what all of the comments to that said and what the hell is wrong with you?
Well, let me think about it for a second.
Okay. On that note, you hear that music. That means we got to step aside here real quickly. When we come back, in addition to figuring out JVT's dietary loves, Steve McGehee is going to join us talking OKC and Lakers.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
City Thunder have been on an absolute tear this postseason, winning and covering every single game so far along the way. Can they complete a second straight sweep tonight? The odds certainly indicate as much. 11.5 point favorites on the road, taking on LA. See if they can close it out today. Total 214.5. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. Excited to get the nitty gritty, not only on this game, but OKC at large. Steve McGehee joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Covers the Thunder for News 9. You can follow him on X as well, at Steve McGehee. Welcome in. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Is it already curtains or canned? The Lakers put up a little bit of a fight later on tonight. How do you see it?
Well, I thought if the Lakers were going to win a game, it would be game three coming back home to try to force some things. And for one half, they succeeded. You know, it helps to knock down 11 threes as well. But then the second half kind of collapsed on them. And that kind of just speaks to what the Thunder can do. They can adapt, they can adjust, and they can turn a bad quarter into a good quarter in a matter of minutes. But the Lakers will throw another punch in the first half. But I had Suns winning, losing in five, and I had Lakers losing in four. So, you know, I wasn't right the first time, so hopefully I'm right the second time.
Steve, I know we talk a lot. There's a lot of different things you can talk about with this Thunder team, but what has been a very good story in this series is A.J. Mitchell. Where the hell is this coming from?
He's been incredible, and they saw it pretty much at the start of training camp last year. They had some good intel on A.J., I was told, you know, at the combine and where he was working out in California, and they liked his style, and somehow all the other GMs and scouts, I'm sure they're looking over their notes right now going, what did we not see that they saw referring to the Thunder? And I'm sure some people are getting a finger shaking at. But he's been incredible, and he's just warming up. But he has really taken off in the playoffs. He didn't get a chance to really play much in the playoffs last year because he had an injury late in the season. But he's ramped up, ready to go this time. But he is not timid. He is not shy. He heads to the basket. Little lefty, has a nice floater going. The shots aren't completely dropping all the way just yet, but eventually they will, and that's trouble for the opposition. But for a guy that was picked number 38 a couple of summers ago, it's got to have a lot of other teams like, okay, we've got to evaluate these second-round picks much better because there's talent out there. Yes, just have to go out there and find it.
And to that point, I think he's kind of a microcosm of what this has been for the Thunder so far in this postseason. They have dominated in the minutes without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, whether it's that third quarter a couple of nights ago against the Lakers or just in general. Their net rating with him off the floor has been incredible. How have they done this in the minutes without Shai?
They're just cranking up with defense as well. AJ has stepped in while Shai has been out. And then, of course, you know, a lot of people are thinking, well, we're going to get our points without Jalen Williams, duh. But they're going to get from AJ and everyone else. It's such a deep roster, as you guys know. You bring in Caruso, then you bring Isaiah Joe, and he's knocking down threes. You bring in, there's so many of them. Jared McCain from Philadelphia, Jay Will out of Arkansas, Aaron Wiggins could play. There's just so many options for them to go through. They just keep coming in, and eventually it's what's wearing out the Lakers, I think, in the second half, and it certainly wore out the Phoenix Suns in round one.
This is more of just a general curiosity for me, but obviously SGA has this MVP caliber season. The Thunder are the team to beat. They're minus 170 favorites to win an NBA title, and there's still more than two rounds to go at this point. Yet a lot of the conversation around the Thunder over the last week or so has been heavily about flopping and that officials aren't catching it and all of this stuff with SGA getting to the line. How has the team and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander himself kind of handled all of that conversation recently? Have they taken it to heart, or are they just going to play how they play?
They're going to play out how they play. I'm not sure they're on Twitter right now or X, you know, looking at the comments or watching the TV shows to see what they're saying, good or bad. There's other people watching that, and then they tell them, and their friends and family will watch. But they don't care about that stuff. This is their style. This is the way they're going to play. And if they call fouls on them, then they'll adjust and play a different way. But they're real aggressive. They're physical. We know that. And sometimes they get away with some fouls and maybe some flopping, but flopping's all over the league. It's all over the league. So it wasn't invented by the Thunder. And I don't think that the fouls were much of an issue in game three. So that talk has kind of calmed down just a little bit. I would imagine a lot of attention's on Wemby today in that elbow if he should be suspended for a game. But Oklahoma City, that's the way they're going to play. And they'll adjust if the referees call it differently.
So they're up 3-0. Human nature would say with a series like this, and especially on the road, that you would lose this game and then go back home and close it out. Do you think this Thunder team would fall victim to that cliche and allow the Lakers the gentleman sweep, or do you think they close this out tonight?
Oh, no, I think internally they want to sweep the Lakers. I mean, this is a storied franchise, and to say that they beat them four straight, it means something to these guys. But they're going to treat it, as Mark always says, a 0-0 mentality. They're going to try to win the first possession. They're going to try to win the first quarter, second quarter, first half, second half. that's just the way they play. But the Lakers, they have to shoot the ball well and not turn it over. And they've been able to do that at times in this series. It's just a matter of doing it for all four quarters, because as you see, the rosters are kind of lopsided. Lakers have some good players, but Oklahoma City has better players and they have a deeper roster. And I love JJ Redick, but Mark Daigneault, he can adjust to whatever a team's doing. He'll find a way to adjust and correct the problems on the court, whether it be first half or second half. So, you know, I think they have the better coach, they have the better roster, they have the better starting five, the better bench, and they have all the momentum right now. So I would be surprised if the Lakers win tonight. But either way, Oklahoma City is going back to OKC tomorrow.
All right. Well, let's make this big picture then, assuming they move on, which I think we all think that is going to happen, up 3-0. Mm-hmm. What is the status on Jalen Williams, J-Dub, and his health?
I'm just going to take my educated guess on this. I didn't think he'd ever play in this series just because mm-hmm. they didn't need him. If this was the NBA Finals, that may be different, but I'm not in that room, in the training room, you know, to see how severe the hamstring injury is, but he's already dealt with two of them this year, so they're going to be cautious. So I would imagine, you know, it sounds like they may not play for another week. So that's going to benefit him. I would imagine he would be ready for the Western Conference. I'm just guessing, though. I'm not sure. He hasn't done much in front of us. Everything, all his workouts have been private. Sometimes he comes out on the court, you know, about 2 hours for a game and shoots some baskets. I haven't seen that in the Phoenix series or in the LA series so far. So I would imagine they're saving him, and just be cautious, because if they don't have him in the Western Conference Finals or the NBA Finals, obviously it's going to be rough. But I would expect him to play in the Western Conference Finals. That is just my educated guess.
Steve McGeehee, News 9 Thunder reporter, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Big picture, and I know it's still a long way to go for San Antonio in their series with the Minnesota Timberwolves coming out to see if they can reach the Western Conference Final against OKC. Should they, though? How do you view that matchup for the Thunder, knowing the struggles they had in the regular season with San Antonio? Are playoffs a different game in your mind?
Playoffs are different, and I think they realized that when they lost that home game to Minnesota. It's just a different feel, a different environment. It's going to be I'd say go seven, and perhaps the home team with the four home games would win, but I would imagine San Antonio would win one in OKC, and OKC would win one in San Antonio. This is the matchup we all want. We all want to see this matchup. It got delayed yesterday. Who knows? Maybe Minnesota can prove us all wrong and do something in their series with the Spurs right now. But it's really hard to tell. That game out in Vegas, the first meeting, you know, it came down to making shots in the fourth quarter. And then the Spurs played the Knicks in the Cup Finals. And the Spurs are right there in the fourth quarter. And then they went cold. And so they ended up losing the Knicks. And then Thunder kind of, you know, were outplayed late in the game in San Antonio, and then 2 days later on Christmas, that's the one where I didn't really understand. Thunder playing at home on Christmas, and they got beat pretty soundly. And then they played again at home and won. And then the last time they played the Spurs was down there in San Antonio, and with eight players, they were down four with 2 minutes to go in the game. And Wembanyama had to play the whole game. They were dealing with reserves. Jalen wasn't there. Shea wasn't there. Chet wasn't there. Hartenstein wasn't there. So I think the Thunder internally feel like they feel good the way they played in those last two games, even though they lost the last one with their bench players. But playoffs are different, and no one's getting blown out. I think all these games will be 10 points or less, but it's going to be so much fun to watch.
Steve, keep up the great work. Thank you for this, and enjoy the game tonight.
All right, take care.
Steve McGeehee, really appreciate his insight on OKC, around the team all the time, doing great coverage over there for News 9. Do you think that, it's the end tonight, end of the road?
Yeah, I don't.
I just don't see much compete even for the Lakers, which is kind of sad.
I mean, they're competing. They've been very good in these first halves. It's just, have enough. Yeah, you don't really have enough. And that is the scary thing for, I think, the rest of the NBA and for the Lakers. J-Dub, Jalen Williams has not played. A.J. Mitchell's averaging over 20 points per game. They got blown out in the minutes without Shea. I mean, where are you going to turn?
Not looking good. Again, the Lakers 11.5 point home dogs tonight. We got to step aside when we come back. This show's gone by quickly. Time for best bets as we wrap up this Monday edition of the program. Stick around.
Speak for yourself.
Whoa, Denver.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Wrapping up this Monday edition of Money Moves in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. If you missed any of the program today, remember you can always listen on your own time in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts. Get Money Moves, download and subscribe there. While you're there, you can get Pod to the Futures. You can check out our whole host of VSiN podcasts each and every day. Some great guests today breaking down both of the NBA postseason games that we have coming up tonight. If you need a little last minute breakdown of where you want to place your cash dollars, we'll have our best bets in a minute here. But something we were talking about a little bit earlier, and JVT does have a good answer now. We were talking.
Not really.
I think you do. Because
I think
this
you're grasping straws.
I don't know. We were talking about the Anna Dua picture that has gone viral. Sportsnet reporter
of food.
Yes.
Calm down, you heathens.
That's gone viral now of her shaved ice mustard mid-game snack thing. And I was just asking JVT, like, okay, well, what's a thing that people have given you grief about or that you thought is like a weird thing that you have eaten? And there's a few things.
There's not a few things. I think there's only one, right? When I was a kid, I used to dip my like chocolate chip cookies in orange juice.
Did you like it? Do you remember
I remember liking it.
How did you grow out of that? Because that is a very strange thing to me. Did you so just orange juice, like a chocolate chip cookie and orange juice?
Yeah. Or like just remember they would give you the generic red juice when you were like at daycare or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
That's
quite literally it.
That's strange. No, you also said ketchup on eggs, but I think that's pretty normal. I think a lot of people.
But that's
do
not
that.
Like an every time thing. That's just if I don't have hot sauce, I'm willing to put ketchup on the eggs. Sort of
okay,
thing.
Sure. I think
some in our audience would say that ketchup on a hot dog is not allowed.
President Obama would say that. That makes me upset.
Taking it a little too seriously.
Wow. But he has this thing where I think it's if you're over...
Wearing tan pants, you're going to get mad at me?
Like, if you're over 10, I believe is his thing. If you're over 10, you shouldn't have ketchup on a hot dog.
Sure.
And I refuse to believe that's correct. Hot dog, I mean, why do I keep saying this? Mustard and ketchup on a hot dog is like my go-to way to do it.
You're a glizzy gal.
I am. I love hot dogs. I have a hat that says bad day to be a hot dog that I wear on the 4th of July every year.
Some would say glizzy girly.
It's very exciting. No, they wouldn't. That's a pet peeve of mine. I don't know why you said
the
that.
The irritation in her voice.
I don't like... Most of our audience is male, so you're not going to like or care about this. But I do not like when people say, I'm a sports girly, or I'm a fitness girly, or I'm a dessert girly. No, you're just a person.
You're a Conn Smythe girly, which leads to the question that I had for you that you did not answer because we did not get to it. But your boy that you were talking about between the pipes for the Canadiens.
Jakub Dobish.
I like the way you say his name. 22-1 to win Conn Smythe.
If there was a goalie to bet, I feel like that would be the
one. Because you still don't buy
Freddie Anderson. Not at all.
Even though, so again, so tell me if I'm wrong. Conn Smythe is postseason, correct?
Yes, it's a lot of people.
It's not most outstanding player, right, where it's just the last two, but granted, human nature, they're probably going to remember what happened last.
Yes, recency bias definitely plays a factor in this,
so,
for sure.
The problem with your logic is that
how well
Freddie,
he's played through two rounds.
He's already building the resume. So the resume is Conn Smythe worthy. If, for whatever reason, we were to come down and say, the playoffs are ending today, yeah, he's probably got a pretty good shot of winning it, right? Considering his resume and how good they have been. So your expectation is that he's just going to implode at some point.
Freddie's going to Freddie at some point. And I think that the level of competition also plays into this as well. Although,
high on the Flyers. I mean, what are we doing here?
For their round one opponent, it was a good matchup for them against Pittsburgh. That's a different thing.
All we were talking about was the Flyers.
If there was a team that was going to beat the Hurricanes, most people thought that it was Ottawa. People had the Senators putting Carolina on upset watch. I was not one of them. But I didn't see that being a sweep either. So they have played better than I thought they were going to be against that level of competition in round one. For them to have made history the way that they have, sweeping both of these series and doing so with the style of play that they have, like, I'm a huge Carolina Hurricanes fan. I would absolutely love it for them if they could finally get over the hump and make and win a Stanley Cup for Rod Brindamore and that whole city. It would be unbelievable. That said, I'm not buying Freddie Anderson. I'm just not. And
Dobish, by the way, 25-1. One of the final raises.
Yes.
You can find that. I said 22.
Frederick Anderson is your second shot on the board. Nathan McKinnon's the favorite still at 3-1. Frederick Anderson, 5-1. Kale McCarr, 10-1. Taylor Hall, 12-1. Just the double digits get larger and larger as you go. The bulk of those at the top, though, are Carolina Hurricanes and Colorado Avalanche players, as you would expect. That's kind of the perceived collision course that we see at the top right now. Why are you crossing your fingers?
McKinnon and Colorado, 1-1.
I think so.
In the sense of if the Avalanche win it all, it's McKinnon and that's it?
That's why I think that you're getting...
There's no chance Kale McCarr can take this from him at 9+
I don't think so. We've talked about this. Okay. I mean, McKinnon's numbers are just better where they sit right now. Even if they were equal, I think that McKinnon's going to get the benefit of the doubt because Kale won Conn Smythe in 2022 when they won.
Okay.
That said, as far as the Carolina Hurricanes element of this goes, I think that there are other players that you can buy in on at different numbers. Like if Logan Stankoven gets back on track and continues to have the numbers that he had, he's a 14-1 shot, right? Like there's a handful of players that you can buy in on. Taylor Hall was the one that we were talking about was if he was going to get on the horse, and he has, and he's the shortest shot as a skater for Carolina now at 12-1. But the Anderson element of it, he's been protected a lot, I feel like, so far in the postseason. He's had some masterful moments, don't get me wrong, but you are what your record says you are, too. And I feel like that guy is going to creep up at some point in the playoffs as you get to more difficult competition. And in the Eastern Conference, if it ends up being Montreal that you have, and the speed and the way that those guys shoot pucks on net, I feel like it's going to be an uphill battle. And he's going to have at least one clunker, if not more.
Of the goaltenders who have been on the ice for more than 100 minutes, who do you believe leads the postseason in high danger chance save percentage?
I'm assuming it's going to be Frederick Anderson.
It is.
I said he's had masterful moments.
I was going to say.
It's going to happen. That's just my belief. That's just my belief.
You know who would be second? Jesper Wallstedt.
Jesper.
Sorry. Jesper. No,
he's got one of those weird names, too.
Don't do me that.
No.
These East European names. Come on.
Sorry. No, it's Jesper Wallstedt, too. It's one of those, like, W's that's
okay, now that if you open this door, I'm going to do this. Every single one of these is going to be properly pronounced from now on.
Don't do that.
No.
I like it when you correct me on NBA players and MLB players. I ask you in commercial breaks how to say people's names.
Wallstedt.
Mm-hmm. You're going to get the full...
I'm going to get it all down.
Do you have any plays today? We can recap
from the weekend really quickly.
Yeah.
You had Montreal Buffalo over 5.5. This was queued up in our program feed. That's why I knew this and we would go to this first to make it easy for our production.
I also didn't bet it myself, but we gave out Montreal money line that day and it said if you got +120 or better to play it. And that came through as well, which is nice.
Don't take credit for things that are not on the graphic screen, please. Thank you very much.
It was on our rundown as a TBD.
Timberwolves +5.5 does not get there over the weekend. That's a Friday play. That stunk. +5.5. How much did they lose by on Friday, Stormy?
I don't know.
7. It wasn't really fun. So the Timberwolves do not get there. For today, because I'm sure she's out of it and won't go in order, Stormy has Colorado, Minnesota over 6.5 at even money.
Oh, I just thought you were going to do the full breakdown.
No, I mean, what's the breakdown? Go on.
Does it have something
to do with a Jesper?
No. If you had the under in game 3, based on like the overall output of scoring chances, you probably felt a little bit lucky to have gotten that home 5-1 final. The other games we've seen go over the posted total. I think at an even money price, being able to hit that over 6.5 is very reasonable, especially with the high-end capabilities that Colorado has on offense and the wall of St. Paul can be had. I think that there's a position where they're going to be able to be at least score more than one goal, right? Like, that's not what we know Colorado to be. They're going to get theirs at some point, and I think tonight they should be able to get a little bit back on track. They've adjusted to what it feels like to be in that building. They have gotten a sense of how Minnesota's going to try to line match and all of those things. So I think that they'll get back on track offensively, and Minnesota we know is very capable of scoring as well. We're going to see Mackenzie Blackwood in net tonight instead of Scott Wedgwood, according to the Avs play-by-play man. Go ahead.
Okay. One thing for me, total in the Pistons-Cavaliers game. You can still find 212.5s out there. Got the worst of the number, but over 213 for me. Would expect a couple of things. First off, I actually thought that it was a great point because we've talked about this at length a couple of times, but Danny Cunningham was with us earlier, Locked On Cavs. Even brought up in the last game, they shot the ball well, but they haven't. You still haven't had that game where they've shot above a massive mark, especially in this series. That shot 38%. They shoot better at home. Would expect them to pick up the pace. 95 possessions in the first game in Cleveland, game three for the series. Would expect, again, you don't want them to set their defense. Speed this thing up. Correct the shooting woes that you've had here and that have yet to really find their level. And Detroit on the other end can go after a Cavs team that I don't think is very skilled defensively, especially along the perimeter. Don't have any real defensive options for Cade Cunningham. So over again, tried it in game three in our killer sports contest. Got there. We'll try this one more time. Over 213.
Even though we're calling it a day here on Money Move, stick around on VSiN. Follow the Money's coming up after this. They'll continue their deep dives on both games in the NBA postseason and the NHL playoffs as they roll on today as well. Have Nick Alberga of Leafs Morning Take, also does a lot of work with the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast. He'll give his breakdown, not only side total, some prop elements, some different futures to look at. He's excellent on the betting side. Was actually texting me last night, giving me grief about how much I was pumping the tires of Mitch Marner. He's a Toronto guy, so I understand, but I'm sorry, Nick, it is what it is. That's a wrap for us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Good luck with your bets.